Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
This is hit very hard to left center field. You can pucker up and kiss that baby goodbye. Drew Bianco rips one deep over the left center field wall, his second home run of the year, and on that one swing, it's 3-0 LSU.
Good morning, Acadiana. This is RP3 and Company, and I am your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing, also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium. Give us a call this morning on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. Once again, 337-706-0111. We have a terrific show lined up for you today. We'll have the voice of the LSU Tigers on during the second hour. Our good friend Chris Blair will be breaking down new athletic director Scott Woodward, as well as the LSU baseball team. Marlon Favorite, our boy, Big Fave. Talk to me, somebody. He'll be joining us in the third hour, giving us his insight about what the Saints should do with the NFL draft, as well as what LSU players could be moving up or moving down draft boards. NFL draft, by the way, first round tomorrow night. Second, third round Friday. It's already here. It's upon us. And then Connor O'Gara, senior columnist for Saturday Down South. He'll join us, giving us the college perspective for the NFL draft. Plus, much, much more. We'll recap Raging Cajuns. Baseball losing a heartbreaker. We'll help preview the Raging Cajuns softball team on the road tonight at Louisiana Tech. Plus, we will have a taped interview from yesterday with Adrena Wagasback, the longtime head coach at St. Thomas More. The softball team is back in Sulphur, looking to win their fifth state championship under her. That was a segment that we taped yesterday when I filled in for Uncle Jordy on the Jordy Holtberg Show, so we'll replay that coming up at 6:32. But we'll lead things off with LSU. Cody, LSU won a midweek game, my friend. How's it feel?
Yay! Started off great. I was excited early, and then I'll put it to you this way.
Here it comes.
After the 3-run home run there, which I think was in like the fourth inning or maybe even earlier than that, I cruised through the next six innings. Ate a little little baked barbecue chicken there. Had some corn and potatoes.
Now you're speaking my language.
Put it to you this: by the time the LSU game was over, and I put SmackDown on the TV, I didn't make it through SmackDown. I had fallen asleep. The game was boring. If not for a 3-run home run, oh my goodness! If not for a 3-run home run, LSU loses. Let's put that out there first. But
yeah. Not a great look. At the end of the day, a win is a win. They've struggled with the midweek games all year. And they've struggled with midweek games against inferior competition all year long. So the fact that they were able to piece together a win is That's what it's all about, because it's, you're not going to get any style points, so to speak, with clobbering Lamar. Now, we talked about it yesterday on the show. I anticipated the way LSU bats performed against Florida, where they scored 27.2 million runs, that I felt that they were going to be teeing off on Lamar's pitching with a team ERA hovering around 6, facing off a pitcher that had not won a game. I was, in fact, wrong. I was wrong, which happens daily. Okay? Happens daily.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like you're doing it all. Maybe you should start trying to be wrong.
I should start trying to be wrong.
And then we'll get more accurate predictions from Raymond.
Yes.
You sound smart saying it, though.
I just thought the way they had been hitting
it
over the weekend against
Florida.
It seemed
like the perfect storm, didn't it?
That they would just tee off on them, right?
I mean, even Ben McDonald and Lynn Rollins were saying last night that Jack Dallas, because great name, should be a wrestler, the starting pitcher for Lamar, Jack Dallas. That's awesome, right? I mean,
oh, yes.
They were even saying, though, by like the third inning, they were like, man, Dallas is out here, you know, just completely putting to shame his, or maybe it was the second inning, because I think maybe he gave the home run to Bianco in the second inning with 2 outs, now that I'm remembering back. Again, I fell asleep, so I'm not exactly sure. But I know they were talking about how he was just completely, you know, putting his season numbers, if you will, on its head compared to how he had been throwing all season.
Yeah, it was in the second inning, the 3-run blast.
Yeah, through the first couple innings, and batters, you know, Ben McDonald, former first overall draft pick, Golden Spikes winner, you know.
One of the best ball players I've ever seen.
Right. He was saying how, man, this kid is not supposed to be this good, but the ball's got a little something out of his hand tonight, basically. He's saying it in a nicer way, but
yeah.
That's what he was saying. So, I mean, I don't know. It seemed like what would be the perfect storm for LSU to just tee off and put up another, you know, double-digit run output. But they did just enough to win, which I guess is all you got to do. But, you know, it's hopefully that's not signs of what's to come when they play another subpar team, but in conference.
Lamar, with the defeat, drops to 14-27.
Now, Lamar has 8 pitchers, though, that are hurt. Their ace has been hurt before the start of the season, I heard last night. So their season has been kind of derailed before it even started.
A Southland team, you can't afford to lose one pitcher. Like at LSU, you can kind of piece things together, right? When one guy gets hurt, you can have another guy step up because he has so many of these coveted recruits on your roster. Lamar, that's not how that works.
No, when you lose your ace plus 7 more guys on your pitching staff, I mean, now you're talking about your left fielders coming in to get you 3
Cody,
innings.
Cody, need you to come in.
Right, so it's a struggle.
If I was at Alex Box Stadium yesterday, they would have been like, you covered Lamar while working in Beaumont. You have
you're
eligibility.
In
you're in the game. Game. You're in the game, Ray. The sophomore right-hander that Cody mentioned, Jack Dallas.
Great name.
He's dropped down to 0-5 on the year. He only pitched 4 innings, allowing 3 earned runs on 3 hits, which is not too bad. 3 hits, 3 earned runs is not too bad. LSU does improve to 27-15 overall in the season, and now they'll head into a weekend series at Alabama for a 3-game set there in the SEC West. Just like we said yesterday, Lamar is one of the worst teams in the Southland. Alabama is one of the worst, if not the worst, team in the SEC this year. So we'll see if they can keep that moving right along. Landon Marceau, getting a little bit of confidence here. The freshman right-hander who started off the season as the Saturday starter, struggled, lost his confidence. He only pitched 3 innings yesterday, but he did pick up the win. He allowed only 3 hits and recorded a strikeout. But this is what Paul had to say afterwards. It wasn't an awe-inspiring victory, but we got the job done. We had only 4 hits. They only had 4 hits? Is that true?
They were out hit a lot. There were some walks.
I fell asleep early, too. Like I.
There were some walks in there. Like that 3-run home run was set up by a walk, and then C.J. Willis, like,
beat out. Oh, no, I got it right here. So Kay Beloso singled to shortstop with 1 out in the bottom of the second. Then D.H. C.J. Willis from Ruston, followed by reaching first on a fielder's choice.
Yeah, he beat out a double play.
and then Giacomo then singled to move Willis to second with two outs.
So
then Bianco launched a three-run homer with two outs.
So there's three of your four hits in the game. A Beloso single, a Giacomo single, and then a three-run home run from Bianco.
There you go.
I told you the game was boring. It put me to sleep. I love SmackDown because SmackDown's only 2 hours. You can get through it a lot quicker on the DVR than a three-hour Raw. I fell asleep before the end of SmackDown. I don't know if Kofi Kingston and Big O beat. I forget who the other. Like, see what I mean? Issues last night. But, yes, three of your four hits came in the second inning there. They played seven more of those.
That's my only concern. We've talked about this.
I mean, the pitching was good, but how? But Alabama's going to hit better than Lamar.
I'm not concerned about this weekend. My bigger concern is, are you going to have a Stony Brook kind of moment in an NCAA regional?
Man,
are you going to mess around because they've played down to the inferior competition all season long? Non-conference and conference. We saw what they did at Missouri. Missouri's a bad team. So that's my only concern about this team. We're talking mid-April here, late April.
Right.
And they seem to be uninspired against teams that aren't on that top 10 level that they are. I have no problem getting behind LSU if they get to a super regional or if they get to the NCAA championships, the College World Series in Omaha, because they'll be playing against other top-notch competition. My concern is, are they going to get caught sleeping? Are they going to get caught sleeping, looking ahead, looking past one of these teams that's going to be playing in the Baton Rouge Regional? And that's my only concern.
I have the exact same concern, but you say that you're not too worried about this weekend. LSU needs to host a regional. They need to stay in that top 16 in the RPI. If they're looking too far ahead and not concerned about this weekend enough, you drop two out of three on the road to an Alabama team, you can kiss those chances goodbye.
Ole Miss is struggling too now, and they welcome the Rebels next weekend, right? So they're struggling.
Yeah, that's the next home series is Ole Miss.
The next home series is Ole Miss, and then LSU, at home against Tech.
I mean, you can still run off some crazy wins and maybe even somehow sneak in as the 7 or 8 national seed. It's possible.
I'd have more confidence in LSU if they were playing Vanderbilt.
Because
I know against a team like Vandy that they're going to step up. But against a team that's not Vanderbilt, that's not a top 10 ranked team, against a Lamar who they struggled with,
a raging Cajuns team that's got all the talent in the world but is not playing the best ball this season.
That's correct.
Gives LSU hell.
Lamar was able to trim the lead down from 5-1, 5-2, all the way down to 5-3. Lamar first baseman Anthony Coron was hit by a pitch with the bases loaded and two outs in the top of the ninth. You have one job to do. You have one job. Don't hit the batter, relief pitcher. That's your job.
It was Devin Fontenot, I believe it was.
Oh.
I legit had gotten up already and gone into the kitchen to Kaylee had unloaded the dishwasher, and she'd gone lay down. She's like, hey, hit that for me before you go to bed. And I was like, all right, yeah. It was the ninth inning. I was like, oh, I'm going to go do that now. Like, watch the end of it kind of at a weird angle, but it's a 5-2 game. I was like, I'll do that. And in the middle of loading the dishwasher, I had to go back into the living room. I was like, what are we doing here? Why am I sitting back on my couch?
Lamar, a 14-win Lamar team, had the bases loaded.
With one of their better hitters up, too.
In the top of the ninth. And they scored a run because you hit a batter. And they still had the bases loaded.
It was high drama at the end of the game, which was unnecessary.
Paul did what he did. He got all these pitchers a lot of reps. Matthew Beck pitched two innings, allowing only one hit and one earned run while striking out three, so that's a good relief performance by him.
Yeah, that one hit was a home run. Somebody just got into one. It happened.
Freshman Riley Riggs, Treadgill, he tossed two-thirds of an inning, allowing two hits.
They call him Big Riggs.
Big Riggs?
They call him Big Riggs.
Oh, is that what Lynn Rollins called
that's
him on
amazing.
The broadcast?
His teammates call him Big Riggs. It's nice.
Allowing two hits, one and run with two strikeouts. Mikhail Hilliard worked a scoreless inning. Trent Vitmeyer came in, recorded a strikeout as well. Todd Peterson pitched the scoreless eighth inning, and then it was Fondo, who's been, you know, closing the door, pitched the ninth inning to earn his fourth save of the season. So, look, a win is a win. It's an ugly win, as Paul Maneri said. LSU takes care of business, wins a midweek game, and now they'll turn their focus to Alabama. Let's hope it's a more inspired effort than what they've shown against the likes of Lamar, UL, Big Knee State, Northwestern State, Southern. Alabama is not a good ball club. LSU should whip the pants off of the Crimson Tide this weekend. It should be 12-2 average for all three games. So don't go messing around in Tuscaloosa. Because you will never hear the end
I'm
just saying.
This 12-run average, let's just take 2 out of 3. If it was at home, I'm calling for the sweep.
2 out of 3?
I never call for a sweep on the road.
Okay. I can respect that. I can respect that because you respect the game.
Yeah.
In baseball, it's difficult to win on the road. I got you.
And in the SEC, Friday nights are Friday nights in the SEC. I guarantee you. I don't know who it is, but I bet you Alabama has a pretty darn good pitcher coming out on Friday nights.
Did you know that it just means more?
Oh, absolutely. You said that drop. I'm going to find that somewhere.
It just means more. More RP3 and Company coming up after this break right here on 103.7 The Game.
We welcome to the mound the voice of Alec Box Stadium, Bill Frankes. Bill was diagnosed with prostate cancer earlier this year, and he underwent successful prostate surgery at the beginning of this baseball season. He has recovered from his surgery and has returned to his full duties with LSU baseball. Bill, throw us a strike.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parch III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. The LSU baseball team may have won an ugly game, but there was an amazing, beautiful moment prior to the game, actually at the start of last night's game there at Alex Box Stadium. You heard it right there as the voice of Alex Box, the longtime LSU baseball sports information director, Bill Frankes, threw out the first pitch. It was Prostate Cancer Awareness Night there at Alex Box Stadium. LSU even honored the night by wearing those blue-teal-colored helmets and some wristbands. And obviously, Bill was diagnosed with prostate cancer. He fought it. He's been in recovery. He's even now back at work, as you heard there. And the whole team, not only did he get to throw the first pitch and got a standing ovation from the home crowd there at Alex Box Stadium, the whole team, every Tiger, came out and shook his hand afterwards, which was a tremendous moment to see him out there walking and throwing the first pitch. Of course, it was a strike. And, the great thing about Bill, for anyone of us that have ever interacted with him over the years, is that he is a pro's pro, one of the nicest guys you will ever interact with at LSU, always professional, always accommodating, always goes above and beyond, and he's handled this whole situation like a champ. Has not really made it about himself. He's kind of deflected attention. And he's used this as a platform to spread awareness about prostate cancer. So a tremendous moment there before the game last night. And a well-deserving ovation and a lot of handshaking for a guy that deserves it. So congratulations to Bill on having that special moment there for a team that, look, he bleeds purple and gold. He loves that baseball team. He's been there for 3 decades. Okay, he's become an institution at LSU, and just a pro's pro. And I can't say enough good things about Bill. It's one of the guys I respect more than most in this business is him. So it was great to see him have that nice moment last night.
And maybe it's because just the accessibility to baseball games at LSU than to football. But you may know this just because we're in the business, but I would be willing to bet that if we asked someone off the sidewalk, who does the PA announcing at LSU baseball games? I'd say majority of people would come up with Bill Franquez. They would know that name.
They would know him, yeah.
Who does the PA announcing at Tiger Stadium? Dan Bornay. No one really.
We know that.
We know that name, but I don't think the average person would maybe, a season ticket holder would know that name or something. But just a fan that just watches and follows the team.
Yeah.
Bill Franquez, to me, is more synonymous with LSU than you would say the guy that does the PA announcing for the football team during football season, which is obviously the biggest time of year when it comes to athletics at LSU.
It's also about accessibility, and it's also how the LSU baseball program has always been ran. That's the other component of that. It's very nuanced in the fact that it was always about availability. It was always about making themselves accessible to the fan base and to the media. I mean, when you go to a media day event there for LSU baseball, and there's like 30 media members for baseball, that's the only team in the country that's probably that way. Maybe Texas, because they have a great tradition too, and they get fired up.
They just want to pretend to be that way.
Oh, there it is. But that started with Skip, and Bill worked with Skip all those years, and that's carried on through Smoke, and then obviously
no,
with Paul.
No, it didn't. You'd be quiet and talk about Smoke LaValle carrying anything on. He didn't do nothing. A Smoke LaValle fan.
You'd be nice to Smoke. First of all, Smoke is Skip's boy.
Doesn't mean anything to me.
Okay.
Doesn't make him my boy.
The job was just too big for Smoke. Smoke was not a bad coach. He was just not. He was good for ULM.
I'm almost positive.
Right. You know what I'm saying? He was one of those guys. And then, look, dude.
I'm almost positive.
You have to follow the legend.
He would fall asleep in the dugout multiple times a game. I'm almost certain. Like,
unexpected shade being thrown at Smoke LaValle on this RB3 and company. I was not expecting that today.
I mean, he didn't kill the program, so I'll give him that. They came back.
Nah, it's just, look. Remember Ron Zook had to replace Steve Spurrier at Florida?
Yeah, they had a whole fireronzook.com. Oh, that was a thing, yeah.
Never want to follow the legend.
It didn't get that bad.
You never want to follow the legend. You want to be the guy after the guy that gets fired. Okay? Like, God forbid, the poor man who has to follow Nick Saban at Alabama. It's not going to work out. Okay? I'm just telling you. But a terrific moment there at Alex Box Stadium last night for Bill Franquez. When we come back here, interview with STM head softball coach Andrea Wagspack right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. Right now we're going to replay an interview I conducted yesterday while filling in for the Jordy Holtberg Show with longtime St. Thomas More softball coach Andrea Wagspack. Our next guest knows plenty about what it takes to get there. She's the longtime head softball coach at St. Thomas More. She has won 4 state championships as the head coach of the Cougars in 07, 09, and then back-to-back in 2013 and 14. And once again, she has STM back there with a chance to bring home some more hardware. The 6-seed STM will take on 2-seed Archbishop Hannah on Friday at 11 a.m. on Field 16 there at Frash Park. It's our privilege to welcome to the program the longtime head coach of the STM softball program, Andrea Wagspack. Coach, how are you doing today, and congratulations on getting back to Sulphur.
Oh, man, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on the show and get to talk about some of the softball around the area. We have some great softball down here, and my program is super excited about getting the head back to Sulphur. It'll be the last time the select schools are out in Sulphur, so it's kind of a special time and a special time to make it. So we're hoping that we can win that last select school Division II state championship over there on Saturday.
Coach, talk a little bit about that. I mean, your team has been a perennial state powerhouse in recent years under your watch there. What does it mean to you for this year's team? I know you guys entered the tourney as a six seed, a little bit lower than traditionally that you guys have been in there. But you make a statement in the opening round, 12-0 over Vanderbilt Catholic, and then you upset the three-seed Haynes Academy 9-3 there over the weekend to punch your ticket to Sulphur. So what does it mean for you for this being the last year and everything like that and kind of the road that your team has been forced to take?
Well, you know, I think our road and what we've done in upseating the three-seed Haynes Academy was a really solid ball club. My girls, we're really on an uptick right now. We've been playing well. We've actually had an opportunity to have several days of practice in a row. You know, at SCM, we have 50% of my team plays another sport. And so I actually don't get all my kids until after we started playing games already. So, we're finally seeing some meshing together here at the end of the season, when we actually have some days in a row to practice. And my kids have just been working hard and they're fighters. I have some competitors in this group. And it means a lot for us that we get to be in Frosh Park this last year for the select schools. Every year is a different journey. Every year is a little different. But I'm telling you, I've got a group of fighters. We're young. We got only two seniors in this group. But that sophomore group for us has been just super competitive and been able to ignite us and really get us moving in the right direction here late in the season.
Coach, STM has had a tremendous amount of success since the turn of the century. They've won 7 state championships in softball, 4 under your watch. But I know, talking to you a little bit, that you know there were some fears there only a few years ago about the amount of kids on the roster, that you had some low numbers, you had a dip, it just cycled through that way. But how fearful were you a few years ago that, you know, maybe you wouldn't be able to keep this, you know, this great success going due to a lack of numbers?
We were extremely fearful. As a matter of fact, we started doing stuff in the summer to keep our feeder school kids interested in softball. You know, the way that all the travel and all the club stuff is going nowadays and trending, kids are picking one thing at a young age. And so we were really seeing that in our feeder schools. Our feeder schools actually quit playing for several years. And that's when we saw that big drop off. I think, in 2017, that we had 13 kids. I mean, I was extremely fearful, and then we were graduating a bunch. You know, so we really tried hard and worked hard in the summertime to offer camps and clinics and get kids playing again and get them interested and work around their all these other things that are going on and show them that it's possible. You know, you got to be willing to compromise. These are kids. And, you know, when they're picking sports when they're 10, 11, and 12, I feel like we're really stunning their growth as people, as athletes. You know, and it's unfortunate that that's happening, but it's happening more and more across the board, and I think in all sports we're seeing that a lot more. But there was a time when I really thought we may not have softball at SCM at all. I wasn't sure that we would actually have the numbers, much less stay competitive. But just doing that hard work in the summer and keeping kids playing and showing them that they can do more than just one thing and allowing that, being willing to compromise with that has really helped our numbers to grow again. And hopefully we can keep that going and keep moving in that direction, keep the program competitive.
Coach, you know, obviously another low point despite the numbers was that, you know, the down year in 2017 where it was the first losing record since 97, but you guys still won a playoff game, but then that was the big rebound last year, right, where you guys won your first outright district championship in 4 years. You advance back to the state tournament, and you guys go toe-to-toe with defending champion Parkview Baptist in a game that you ended up losing in the D2 semis 12-10. How were you able to do such a quick turnaround there? I know you're a veteran coach. You know how to cultivate these relationships with these kids and win championships, but how were you guys able to turn it around so quickly from 17-18?
Well, I think in 2018, my pitching staff, that 2017, we had a major injury to one of our current senior pitchers. At the time, she was a sophomore. She was anticipated to be our number one at the time. And just a freak accident in the weight room, tore labrum in her non-pitching shoulder, just sent us all out of whack. And so Peyton DeZarmo really had to step up, and she was a lone soldier on the mound and really had never had to carry a team. So, you know, 2017, that was rough going. And but she needed to go through that. Our team needed to go through that to know that she can survive, and she's a fighter. And that experience made her and our other pitcher, Emily Landry, closer. They were extremely competitive together. They pushed each other. And not only that, we had a large freshman crew, that little group that was working in the summer. We had, I think 10 or 12 freshmen come in that were just competitors and pushed everybody to be a little bit better. And so as a for a coach, when you have that competition going on at practice, it makes your job a little bit easier. I mean, everybody's competing to start. Everybody wants to win. But the growth of that circle, the kids in the circle with Peyton and Emily, their junior year was just huge. You know, and anybody that's in high school softball knows when you're strong in the circle, your team's going to be strong and hard to beat. And so those two really balance each other out well, and they just push each other to be better. And Peyton going through that rough patch in 17, having to be the lone soldier in the circle, made her 10 times better competitor, and she really learned how to fight.
Coach, you hinted at it earlier in our conversation that you got a fairly young team, right? Only two seniors and only two juniors.
Yeah.
You're primarily made up of sophomores.
Yes.
How impressed have you been with the fact that you have such a young team, but yet they've come together like they did last year and continue to do so this year?
I think what we've done and what they've done as a group speaks for itself. And like I said, you know, a lot of that sophomore group, they play basketball, soccer. I got cheerleaders in there, and they show up. And look, when I tell you we start playing, the minute they're there, they start playing the next day. That's what we're doing. You know, and that just goes to show you their grit, because I'm sure they're exhausted and they're tired, and they come right back to softball season and they refocus and they get locked in. And it's hard. Together, I think I counted the other day, all together during the softball season, we had 10 practices where we had all of our kids all together. And when you're talking about a 6-week span, you know, everybody knows how technical and fundamental softball is, just with hitting and fielding and all throwing the right way, all those mechanical things. So for these kids to get refocused and locked in and really perform well on the softball field speaks volumes about their character, about their competitiveness, and who they are and what they want. And so they're pursuing that goal and that dream. They have big dreams of going to softball and being there, and they just didn't want to be denied. And so when we had that opportunity to practice, they really have locked in and focused. And I think, you know, what we've done in terms of – I'm not a real big stat person, but what we've done in terms of wins and losses and where we are as a team, it speaks for itself. And so that group has just been – I can't – the competitiveness, we haven't had that in a long time. My two twins, my two juniors, they're twins. And those two, too, they are overly competitive sometimes. But, you know, that they bring that fire. And that sophomore group just – they love to compete, man, and they are – they really lifted the level of play.
We're talking to STM head softball coach Andre Wagaspak. Coach, let's talk about your opponent come Friday, Archbishop Hannah. What do you know about them? Yeah. What kind of challenges do they present your Cougars?
Well, they're coached by a veteran coach. Coach Becky Lambert's been around the game for a long time. She's a collegiate player, knows the game well. They're always well-coached and well-disciplined. Hannah's a perennial team in the playoffs year in and year out, and they're always competing. They're very young. They're very similar to us. They play a lot of sophomores. They got a couple juniors in there. There's one, maybe two seniors that really contribute. You know, and they're like us. They go by that circle. And so they have two pitchers as well. One that is more their starting kid, throws it upper 50s. And we actually faced them earlier in the year. We didn't play so well. Hopefully they play a little bit better this time around. But they, you know, you leave it down the middle of the plate. They're super aggressive at the plate. We have to make sure that we do a good job of making those basic plays and not giving anything extra. But they have a great pitcher. She's got good movement on the ball. She spins the ball well. Good screwball, good curve. She can throw it up in the zone. So we just have to be disciplined, you know. We hit those balls down and on the white and challenge our defense. You know, we're fortunate that we have some speed this year. We can cause some chaos. So hopefully that's our goal. Cause a little chaos, make them play defense and, you know, see where those chips fall, where they may, and hopefully we can get to 21 outs before they do. So that's the plan.
Coach, I appreciate you making some time for us. I know you're immensely busy, especially with the preparation this week, but, best of luck, to you and your team this Friday, and congratulations on the great season, getting back to Sulphur, and we'll be rooting for you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all. Have a good day.
Once again, give a big shout-out and thanks to longtime STM head softball coach Andrea Wagaspack for coming on the show yesterday while I was filling in for Uncle Jordy on the Jordy Hultberg Show. And best of luck to her and her squad. Look, she's already won 4 state championships. They have a good chance of possibly bringing home a 5th. It'll be a tall task starting on Friday there at Frash Park. But this team is led by one of the best coaches in all of Acadiana, so they have just as good of a chance as anyone does in the region of bringing home some hardware. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk more sports. Yeah, I know. Stunning. Right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos. We're broadcasting live right here from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. The UL Raging Cajun softball team is going to be on the road tonight for their final midweek contest of this stellar season. If you hadn't heard, the Raging Cajuns, they're really good. They are now ranked as the number 8 team in the country. They are undefeated in Sunbelt Conference play. They have now the best start in Sunbelt Conference history. And they wrapped up the regular season championship over the weekend. In addition, Summer Ellison surpassed the 500 career strikeout mark. She leads the nation in wins. And Keeley Milligan is now the all-time single-season leader in stolen bases. And she's only 2 away from breaking the conference record for stolen bases in a season as well. So they're going to be putting a long winning streak on the line as they make their first visit to the town of Peaches, right? Ruston's known for their peaches, is that correct? I do believe.
Are they?
Yes, Ruston Peaches. That's a thing.
Is that a thing?
I think that's a thing.
Isn't there like a brewery or something in Ruston too?
I have no idea. I haven't spent a lot of time in Ruston.
I know there's a good burger joint called the Bulldog.
That is true. I've had a burger at the Bulldog.
I know that much.
The brewery, I don't know.
Yeah, right.
Food? The man who was once called Three Bills by one of his friends. I know about the burger place. Raging Cajuns 42-4 overall. Louisiana Tech is a pretty good ball club themselves. They're 36-12. This is the team currently right now that has the highest RPI of any of the teams left on the Raging Cajun schedule. And that only includes Coastal Carolina and ULM. So it's a final midweek game, last tune-up, so to speak, for a weekend series. They host Coastal Carolina for senior weekend this coming weekend there at Lamson Park. They're number 8 in the country, their highest ranking of the season. They're ranked 8 in both the USA Today NFCA poll as well as the ESPN USA Softball Top 25 polls. They went 5-0 last week, including run-ruling Georgia State in all 3 games. This is what like I said before, the first appearance at Lady Texter Softball Complex since 2008. Jerry Glasgow's squad brings a pair of lengthy win streaks into the contest. Right now, they're riding a season-best 19-game overall winning streak. Their last loss was that extra-inning affair versus McNeese. They also bring into the game a 16-game road winning streak. And UL leads the nation with 17 true road wins. The Raging Cajuns only have 7 regular season games remaining before postseason play begins with the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in lovely San Marcos.
Mm-hmm. I laughed. I didn't realize my mic was still on.
I'm like, someone's had a bad experience in San Marcos. Now, once again, Louisiana Tech is a good ball club. Like I said, 36-12 overall. Right now, they're the current Conference USA West Division front runner. So they could very well win their own division. This is the first meeting between the two ball clubs since 2016 when they met at the Sand Dollar Classic in lovely Gulf Shores. But UL has won the last 26 meetings. 26. 26. Okay. A streak which began with a 12-1 win in the second game of a doubleheader in Ruston back in 1999. Where were you in 1999, Cody Schutz?
I don't know. What grade are you in when you're nine? Was it like fourth, fifth grade?
You were 9 years old in 99?
I had
already graduated from junior college by that time dropped out of South Alabama.
On this day in 1999, I was still eight, to be technical. I was born in a year that ends in zero, so it's easy to keep up with.
I was born when Jimmy Carter was still president. That puts everything in perspective right
I
there.
Couldn't even begin to – I know Jimmy Carter was president. Don't ask me what year he was president. Like, I went to the same school as that kid, though, that when he was like 4 years old, he named every president in the United States he's ever had. He was on the news station in Baton Rouge because just a little I don't know what you call it, just culture story about a little small kid who can name all 40-some of the presidents at the time really quickly back to back to back. Now he's the lead singer of a – pretty well known throughout the state metal band. So there you go.
Unexpected knowledge being brought to the
layers,
table.
Layers, Raymond. Layers.
Layers to Cody Schutz. I learn more and more about you every day. I learn more and more about you every day. Now, obviously, look, we already talked about what you're going to get from the Raging Cajuns. They got their great hitters, Sarah Hudick, the Texas A&M transfer, Texas Tech transfer, Raina O'Neal, Keely Milligan from Texas A&M as well. You got the Grimion sisters, Alyssa Dalton. They got a murderer's row of a lineup, Lexi Como. Summer Ellison is the preseason Sun Belt Pitcher of the Year. She's more than likely going to be the Pitcher of the Year. She should be. 20-game winner. Summer needs one more win to get to 30. And she would become the fifth Raging Cajun softball player to get 30 wins in a season in program history. So that's a pretty good year for her. She's currently the national leader in victories with 29 and the Sun Belt's leader in strikeouts with 258 this season. 258. There's still 7 games left in the regular season. Ridiculous. She's going to get to 300 strikeouts. Easy. So we'll see if the Raging Cajuns can keep it rolling there up in Ruston tonight as they take on the Texters in the final midweek game and final non-conference game of the regular season for the Raging Cajuns. That's going to wrap up the first hour of this RP3 and Company edition. Coming up in the second hour, Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Tigers, is going to be coming up here in the second hour. Stay tuned right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me things drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Thomas Wolfe once said that you can't go home again. but clearly they've never been to Baton Rouge. I grew up a few miles from here, and LSU was a part of my life from my earliest memories. At the age of 10, I was climbing the stairs of Tiger Stadium during football games, hawking bags of peanuts for 25 cents a bag, stopping every now and then to take in the pageantry of LSU football. After graduating from Catholic High, there was never any thought of not going to LSU, and I spent four wonderful years here as an undergraduate. Life took me into government and lobbying work, mentored by a great guy, Buddy Romer, and others, with LSU never too far away, literally and figuratively. And fate brought me back to work for President Mark Emmert in external affairs. It was incredible to be here, as President Alexander said in 2003, with this wonderful gift. And when LSU brought home the National Football Championship for the first time in decades, it was really a special time. After stops in Washington and Texas, I'm back home.
Scott Woodward has come home, ladies and gentlemen, to Baton Rouge as the new athletic director for Louisiana State University. Welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. So, yesterday's presser was extremely impressive from Scott for numerous reasons. Thomas Wolfe reference, James Carville shout out, Buddy Romer shout out. He quoted B.B. King lyrics when talking about his mom.
Right. I want to say something else I realized yesterday, or I realized this morning, that was also referenced in. At the very end there, he even threw in a reference. So he even hit us with the Dwayne The Rock Johnson reference. My man, Scott Woodward, all-time favorite AD of anything ever. He should athletically direct the world.
He just felt like it was a drop mic kind of thing.
Like he wrote this like 10 years ago, and it's just this. The speech has been in his back pocket ever since then.
He returns home. He is going to be the savior, right? That's what it is. He gave love to Ed Orgeron. He gave love to Skip Bertman. He gave love to Mark Emmert, his mentor. He does Thomas Wolfe, Buddy Romer, James Carville, B.B. King. I'm like, all right, I got to stand up and salute you because that's an impressive press conference. And he seems so natural, so at home, right? He was relaxed. Like he wasn't nervous or stoic or cagey as the previous athletic director was for 11 years. It felt natural. It felt like it was his time to shine and he'd been waiting for this moment and that this was his dream job. I mean, it has to be, right? I mean, he paints the picture for you there, selling peanuts inside Tiger Stadium, watching games growing up in Baton Rouge. Went to Catholic High, went to LSU, worked for LSU. They gave him a portion of the field goal post inside Tiger Stadium from the 2003 National Championship team.
That thing looked heavy.
That thing looked heavy. That was awesome.
I slapped the wind bar and did that.
Okay. And it was perfection for a press conference. Now, that said, you do not become a successful athletic director by simply winning a press conference. There's work to be done at LSU. And he mentioned that during his press conference where he touched on a slew of different issues. When asked what his first steps as the new athletic director at LSU, this is what Scott had to say.
First and foremost, and I've used this before and I've said it before, doctors take a Hippocratic oath, and part of that is first do no harm. And that's what we have to do to this incredible institution is, look, we're not going to screw up traditions. We're not going to go about changing things radically. I'm going to listen, and I'm going to talk to people, and we're going to make things to figure out how to continue this success and even how to take it to new and greater levels, because you can always do that here. And so I'll do a lot of listening, you know, and you'll hear all my stupid cliches and metaphors. I'm warning you, but, you know, one of my favorites is, you know, God gave you two ears and one mouth, and so I'm going to do a lot of listening.
God gave you two ears and one mouth.
Yes, Miss Holloway. That takes me back to third grade.
Right.
I had a teacher say that all the time. I like to talk.
Look, I don't know Scott from a hole in the wall, okay? LSU is not my team. But you got to like this guy. Like, and you got to be impressed by him. What impressed me the most yesterday, he's confident, Cody, but yet he has humility, right? He's comfortable in his own skin, and he seems to be – you understand? It's a weird thing to say about an athletic director, but you never felt interacting with Joe Oliva, mostly from afar, because he was very much known for just being held up in his castle. You never felt like Joe was really connected to LSU. It was a job, right? He wasn't part of the community, I guess would be a bigger thing.
Right.
You know this cat right here, he bleeds purple and gold. That he is LSU through and through, right? And he's comfortable with himself, and he's confident without coming off as arrogant. There's a bit of humility. He preached over and over again during the press conference about listening. It was something that he said over and over again. And the other thing was, and this is what I found interesting, was his style of leadership. His style of leadership is going to be different than maybe what we've been accustomed to there at LSU under the previous leadership of Joe Oliva.
I view this job more like an executive producer instead of an autocratic leader. You know, I used to tease Skip all the time when I was here giving him advice. I said, Skip, we can't make personnel decisions this way. You know, we have to really go through this and be thoughtful about it. Not that he wasn't. I was just teasing him, of course. But it's just collaboration. It's transparency. It's just basic, simple things in life that you have to do, that you have to be successful.
Skip Bertman's in attendance. You heard the chuckle a little bit by the press conference. Skip had a smile on his face.
I like how he's checking all those boxes, though. Like, he's saying all the right things. He's like, oh, and I know Skip Bertman. We have a relationship.
And I know Mark Emmerich, which a lot of people hold in high regard. Oh, by the way, I know Buddy Romer.
That's a smart man.
I know James Carville.
Yeah, he's a smart man.
Smart dude, right? Joe Oliva was smart. But Joe Oliva came off as, we had Ron Higgins on last week, right? And what did he say? Joe Oliva came off as he's the smartest guy in the room.
He also said he's the worst athletic director he has ever covered in his 20
years.
Plus or whatever years.
40 years.
The worst. I was like, oh, all right, tell me how you really feel, Ron.
Our boy Ron Higgins does not hold back.
Pull no punches.
Which is why we love him. He checked all the boxes. Very smart. He has an impressive track record. We talked about it. He poached Chris Peterson away from Boise State when other programs could not, got him to go to Washington. He gets to Texas A&M. He gets Jimbo Fisher in when Joe Oliva couldn't close the deal for him to come to LSU. He gets it done at A&M, and then he hires Buzz Williams. This is a guy that's not afraid to making fires or big-name hires. He goes after his guys that he wants, and that's what he's going to do. He also talked about yesterday that, yes, he loves football. He sat there and he sold peanuts inside Tiger Stadium. Look, everyone in the state of Louisiana is more than likely an LSU fan. Sorry, that's reality. And most of them are football fans first and foremost, then maybe baseball. But Scott wants to have all of the children, so to speak, to be excellent.
without sounding arrogant, that my actions speak louder than words, you know, from my time at University of Washington and my 3 years at A&M, is that all sports matter to me. They're like children. And, you know, obviously your two revenue sports, really three here, mean more from a revenue standpoint because they're the goose laying the golden egg. And it's important to have that engine driving all that so we can do great things in our non-revenue sports. But, you know, it's a love affair. It's just like your children. They do different things and they have different skill sets. But, you know, I'm going to focus with, you know, our administration and athletic department on that as well as our other sports. And there will be plenty of access and plenty of things to celebrate because it's been important to what we do. You remember my boss, Mark Emmert, saying that we want to be great in physics and football and everything in between. And that's what these folks attracted me to. That's what King's vision is. And that's what this is about. And any way I can help, I'm going to do it. And the non-revenue sports are part of that, Jock.
Scott Woodward answering a question there by Jacques Doucet about all the other sports. Right now, Scott doesn't have to worry about any making any hires. He's not walking into a situation like that. But remember, shortly after taking over at A&M, it did not take him long within a few seasons, he fired Kevin Sumlin. And Kevin Sumlin brought Texas A&M national recognition by beating Alabama and having Johnny Manziel win the Heisman Trophy and getting to the Cotton Bowl. But they fell off. They were losing recruits. They were losing quarterbacks that were transferring out. The losses kept piling up, particularly to LSU. Kevin Sumlin was gone. Bye. Have a nice day. See you later. I'm going to go spend money. I'm going to get me Jimbo Fisher. Kennedy was a very good basketball coach at Texas A&M. Now, he had some health issues, but the team kind of fell off too. He made a change there. Hired Buzz Williams. This is a guy that's not afraid to hire and fire. Everyone is pretty much safe right now. Ed O's in good standing with the way the football program is trending upward. Will Wade right now is not facing anything with the federal government, with the FBI, with law enforcement. He's been reinstated. There's no sanctions coming as of yet, and there may not be. Pulmonary is safe as well. So is the softball program. Nikki Vargas, women's basketball. Scott Woodward's not going to tolerate that program being mediocre. He remembers when Sue Gunter and then Pokey took that program and made it a nationally ranked powerhouse that went to Final Four after Final Four. When the PMAC was sold out night in and night out for women's basketball. So she would probably be the one that would be the first on that quote-unquote hot seat, so to speak. But I think Scott's probably going to give her a year to prove herself. Another big complaint under Joe Oliva had been the lack of a fan experience lacking at Tiger Stadium. Look, the trend when it comes to sporting events is that you have to make it an all-day event that appeals to people from all walks of life. People are more and more, or less and less, going to actual stadiums. We've seen this not only at the lower level with Southland Conference teams and the Sun Belt teams, in particular right here with UL. It's also happening at LSU and at places like Alabama. You have to find ways to entertain people. You have to find ways to embrace technology and to make it an experience for the whole family, just not the diehards who tailgate all day and take advantage of the liquor luges outside of Tiger Stadium. And this is what he had to say about improving the fan experience at LSU.
I'm not smart enough to know. People forget. I've been gone 15 years, and a lot of things have changed here. And I'll have to rely upon a lot of folks. You know, I saw my friend Brian Sharamy, head of the Tiger Athletic Foundation, and Rick Perry and those guys. And we're going to have to really talk as a department about what is going on. I mean, I've got news for everyone that have just been to Tiger Stadium. we are the envy of the nation. And we, our experience in is second to none, and they're crazy about it. So here again, I don't want to screw up what's good, but there's always room for improvement. So I'll do a lot of listening, and I'll see how things are going from that standpoint.
And finally, you know, we jokingly mock the SEC slogan, "It just means more." But in this occasion, it does mean more for Scott being at LSU. It was an easy decision for him to make, and he explained why he's at LSU.
"I'm not solely back at LSU because it's my alma mater. I did not return because this is home to me and my entire multi-generational family. And I'm not, and I did not come back because of the pull of any one individual. I am at LSU because I believe in who we are and what we can accomplish together, and I stress together, and because LSU means so much to me and it means so much to many people here in this great state."
The guy cares.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
You got your guy, LSU. I didn't think we'd find a better hire than when the New Orleans Pelicans decided to hire David Griffin to run their front office. But then LSU's like, "We're getting the best young athletic director in the country." Boom.
I mean, looking in hindsight, because I didn't know Scott Woodward's name before this. I'm not going to try to act like I did. But now knowing his story and where he comes from and everything, for the president of the university, this seems like it was an easy hire. I mean, I know I say the word easy kind of in jest because there's business and things. I get it. But, I mean, he's your hometown guy. And from everything I've seen, all the experts, the talking heads, you know, claim him to be one of the best up-and-coming athletic directors in the country. And considering he's homegrown right out your backyard and alumni.
He's not going to go anywhere, right? He's going to be dedicated. So he's not going to use this as a stepping stone. This is home.
Right.
And he wants to win national championships in multiple sports. This is a guy that you want leading your athletic program. A home run. Glenn Gilbo from Louisiana Gannett said it best the other day. This is the best hire at LSU since Nick Saban.
There you go.
Plain and simple. That's how monumental this could be and how much this could shift the fortunes of the athletic department there at LSU. So, congratulations to Scott Woodward on the new gig. He comes home. And congrats to the LSU fans. You got yourself the best young athletic director in the country. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Raging Cajun Baseball, they dropped a heartbreaker last night in Hattiesburg. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III, here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. UL was three outs away from defeating old rival Southern Miss last night on the road there at Pete Taylor Park in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. Leading 6-3 in the bottom of the ninth. And they gave up four runs to lose the game. Four runs. Tony Robichaux talked about this at the press conference on Monday. Avoiding the three-run inning. To avoid it.
And we talked about it.
The back end has disappointed this ball club all season long. And they did it again. You had a three-run lead, bruh. In the ninth inning. You out-hit Southern Miss 13-10. And you still end up losing the game 7-6. It was just Hanson Monica hit his 11th home run of the season in the second inning. He's the first Raging Cajun to produce double-digit home runs since Stephen Sensley hit 11 back in 17. Hunter Castle's put together his fifth three-hit game of the season, including the team-leading third triple of the year, and scored two runs. Hayden Cantrell, O'Neill Lockridge, and Jordan Wiley also added two hits. So they did their job at the plate on the road, scoring six runs, including plating two in the seventh to give them momentum heading down the stretch. The Raging Cajuns did throw out seven different pitchers. The seven different pitchers allowed seven runs on 10 hits, but it was Jacob Schultz who took the loss after allowing four of those runs on only three hits in an inning, in 1.2 innings of work. I don't know how you bounce back from another heartbreaker. They've had a lot of those this year. This is a team who's 20 and 24 overall, is trending towards finishing under 500 for the season, but yet still beat LSU in Texas. Wrap that around your brain. Disappointing, heartbreaking loss for the Raging Cajuns baseball team. They'll try to rebound this weekend at home versus Texas State with a three-game series that starts Friday night. That's going to do it for this hour of RP3 and Company. Well, no, not the end of the hour. I'm sleepy. I am sleepy. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is manning the ones and twos here at 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. We had a terrific show so far today. We talked a little high school softball with STM head coach Andrea Wagspack from an interview that was taped yesterday when I was filling in for Uncle Jordy on the Jordy Holtberg Show. We talked about LSU baseball getting that midweek victory, finally. It wasn't the prettiest win by any stretch of the imagination, but they did get the job done. But there was a terrific moment beforehand as Bill Franco, as longtime baseball sports information director and the voice at Alex Box Stadium, throughout the first pitch. He's been battling prostate cancer. He's in recovery, and he's back at work. So that was a terrific moment there at Alex Box Stadium last night. We also dive deep into Scott Woodward, new athletic director there at LSU. We are efforting the voice of the LSU Tigers, Chris Blair. But while we'll do that, we'll keep the conversation going. You can give us a call on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's once again, 337-706-0111. If you want to call and let us know what your thoughts are on the new athletic director that's in charge now in Baton Rouge. Cody Schutz.
Raymond.
Your thoughts. How impressive is Scott, and your initial thoughts from listening to yesterday's press conference?
I mean, again, he's saying all the right things, and I'll reiterate it. I didn't know Scott Woodward existed. I had no idea that the Texas A&M athletic director was a Catholic High Baton Rouge graduate, was an LSU graduate, was, you know, die hard purple and gold, but he was over there at A&M. It makes sense now why A&M looked so much at what LSU's athletic department was doing, because
correct,
just by pure coincidence, the fact that he's from here, he has an eye on what's happening in Baton Rouge and everything. And I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't tune into almost every LSU football game, despite being the athletic director at A&M. With all that being said, again, I said it earlier, I think that was the easy decision, was to go get Scott Woodward. as long as he said yes, as long as you didn't come at him with some ridiculous offer and he says yes, it was the easy choice to make. You still had to make the hire and get it right, which they did. But, I mean, as far as I think early returns for this guy is all signs point to up. If we're doing the whole, you know, this is Sparta, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down thing, he's totally getting the thumbs up from me. So
Sparta. I like that. I like this. It's
300. I was gonna do the Triple H thumbs up, thumbs down, but then he only got it from 300, so I didn't wanna reference the reference. Figured I'd reference the original.
I'm not gonna reference the reference. I like that. I like that. That's good. That's good. Take a bow.
I mean, and look, here, I'm just realizing this. I'm speaking of how LSU, this should have been an easy hire for them as long as they didn't screw the call up. But maybe it was even easier than that because Woodward apparently says that this was something that he was never going to say no to.
This was LSU's process, and I'm happy about it and happy for it and happy I'm here today. And you and I will have plenty of time on the radio to talk about a lot of things, and that we'll do it at the appropriate time. But, you know, why I stated in my statements, it's a passion. It's a love affair. And it's the same love affair that thousands and thousands of people in this state have. And to have an opportunity to be a steward of this great place is just something that I have to pinch myself in the morning about. And, you know, I get emotional and I think about it, but it is so, so important to do it right and to do it with integrity. And back to your question is it was easy. You know, it was a call I couldn't say no to.
A call that he couldn't say no to. So that does bring up something interesting, though. He was hired in 2016, I do believe. Woodward was hired in 2016 at A&M. What would have happened? I'm going to play a little devil's advocate here. What if LSU had fired Joe Oliva after the Les Miles mess at the end of the 2015 season and hired Woodward to come home then? What would have happened with the football coaching situation there? What would have happened with the basketball coaching situation? They could have had a chance to get him, but King Alexander stood by Joe Oliva despite the public relations hot dumpster fire mess of the Les Miles situation. A&M hires him after that. What could have been then? So, yeah, I mean, I think if they would have went after Woodward then, when he was still at Washington, they could have got him then. But King Alexander was loyal to Joe Oliva, let him stay on board, and we know how that ended up.
And that, I mean, is you couldn't have read my mind any better. That is the perfect segue. Our guy Tim just called in. And
oh, thanks, Tim.
He has a question for you, and I mean, you were right along the same path that Tim's thinking, because he says that they obviously have had Scott Woodward in their crosshairs for a while. They've been looking at this guy, and now they had the opportunity. They seized the opportunity. They brought him in. Well done, F. King Alexander, on that front. When you did have this opportunity, at least you got it right this time.
People heard his name. Media people heard his name being thrown around as far back as 2 years ago.
Right.
Now, but it was very subtle. It was done very kind of low-key because Joe was in place, and Joe and King had a great relationship. Right. They were very tight. They were two peas in a pod. But you heard people saying, sources were telling them, probably boosters, prominent boosters, right, and the LSU boosters are very influential and powerful, that was the guy that they wanted to come in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe King Alexander thought he wasn't ready. You know, yeah, you did great work. You've been mentored by Mark Emmert. You've done terrific work there at Washington. But I need to see more. I need to see you do it in the SEC. So maybe staying loyal to Joe Oliva allowed Woodward to come in. But ironically, he gets hired by A&M, and it's a detriment to LSU because he's the one that's able to hire Jimbo Fisher and then, you know, brings in Buzz Williams as well. So, I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic
but
there.
To Tim's point, is curious, and he thinks that Woodward is going to have a lot of influence on decisions that happen in the university in general, maybe not just athletically.
That is correct.
And so he's wondering, he wanted to pose the question to us, how much influence, or will he have any influence at all on the future, and that be Woodward, have any influence on the future of F. King Alexander and maybe the next president at LSU? Is that something we shouldn't be worried about? Is Alexander safe? Is he not safe? And if he's not safe, if we work with that hypothesis that F. King Alexander is maybe at the end of his tenure, then does Woodward have any influence on maybe who comes in to replace him in that hypothetical?
I think it's minimal.
Okay.
I don't think you have your athletic director have that kind of sway. Will there be conversations had with Woodward? Of course. Do I think King is threatened to be forced out? No.
So you think the president is safe in your mind for now, at least, right?
He just hired the native son to come back home.
Yeah, but Joe Oliva hired Coach O.
True.
I'm just playing devil's advocate. I don't disagree or agree with you. I'm just being Al Pacino.
I think there's going to be some goodwill here for Alexander, because I think with the board.
I mean, he listened, right?
He listened to the board. Joe Oliva was his friend, the guy that he had aligned himself with.
And he didn't fire Joe Oliva. Joe Oliva is still working. His paychecks are still coming from Louisiana State University.
Right. So it was one of those things where
the more I dig into it,
the King was like, Joe, I need you to resign. Old friend.
I need you
to step down. It's time.
That was over a brewski at the house, probably.
You're still going to get a paycheck.
Yeah.
Someone's going to take care of that. We'll take care of you financially, and you can go, you know.
And the more you map it out like that, the more it does seem likely to me that I think – this hire saved Alexander's job, which is fine. People do that. You come in and you make one big hire, you make one good decision, and you're good to go. And I don't think Alexander needs to be fired, but it was an interesting. I'd say LSU, the higher ups, did exactly what they needed to do to save whatever was left of that sinking ship, because there was time there for a couple of weeks where we were saying Oliva's got to go, and when Oliva goes, Alexander's got to go. They're tied at the hip. If the one goes, the other goes, blah, blah, this and that. And now we're looking at it, and F. King Alexander seems to have found a way to get rid of what people thought was the main problem and kind of deflect a lot of the, oh, well, it's your fault to begin with, right? He's kind of got that off of himself.
Correct, and he's only been in that position since 2013, okay? He's only been the president at LSU, and he comes from Murray State and Cal State, okay? He's only 55, so he's still at the right age. So this could be a way of saying, you know, and at the end of the day, King can be like, well, look, I inherited Joe Oliva. And Joe did do some good things for us, but obviously we needed to make a change. Things should have been handled differently. You know, so I think it's the perfect timing for F. King. I don't think he's threatened. And I don't think now. If he would have maybe balked and caused a stink about backing Joe Oliva, that's a different situation.
He handled the situation properly in order to...
He handled it like a president of the university should.
Right. And, I mean, what more can you ask from that? I mean, a good hire can be, you know, determined 5 years from now. I mean, there's no, you know, Nick Saban was not the best hire in LSU history his first year.
So. No, they lost to UAB.
Right. So, I mean, it's just one of those things to where if you asked me this 2 weeks ago, if you asked me when Joe Oliva gets fired or if Joe Oliva gets fired, does the president of the university go as well? I would have said yes. That would have been my answer. I'm just, you know, full disclosure. Sitting here today right now talking to you, I'm actually kind of happy that F. King Alexander is still going to be the president at LSU. I think he did a hell of a job, all things considered, with this. So that is...
He just got a pay raise.
It's remarkable. It's remarkable, right, the amount of damage control, if you will, that he did, or whoever his team of people did to right this ship.
The LSU Board of Supervisors reviewed Alexander's work performance behind closed doors and then approved renewing his contract. That was in October of 18. So he is going to be running the state's flagship university until 2023. So the governing body, even with all of the Joe Oliva nonsense when it were attached to Les Miles, they still thought King was doing a tremendous job and renewed his contract just last October. So I think he's good to go. And I think convincing Joe Oliva to resign and step down and bringing in the native son, the LSU grad, to come in, I think this is a home run for King. And King likes to be kind of quiet anyway, right? So this is perfect. And Woodward can be up front. King can be in the background, and Woodward can handle everything with the athletic department. And he'll probably do it with ease. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we will be wrapping up the second hour, the full hour, just not the half hour. I misspoke earlier. My apologies. Right here on 103.7 The Game.
Is it the shoes?
Welcome back to RP3 and Company.
He's on fire!
NBA Jam.
You know it, brother. Oh. You know it.
Keep playing it. Keep playing it.
Soundtracks on video games, man. They can make or break a game. They really can.
And this is in fuego.
He's on fire. I have the drop somewhere. Don't worry. They're in here.
Oh, man. This is 103.7 The Game, RP3 and Company. Cody Schutz, Raymond Parts III, broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios. Presented by Lafayette Roofing, also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1.
Is it the shoes?
Yes. Well, that's how you felt late last night when the Dame had himself a hell of a game. Damian Lillard for the Portland Trailblazers.
Dame Dollar.
Dame Dollar. Not only did he score 50 points.
50 points.
He hit a 37-footer. At the buzzer to eliminate the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Is it the shoes?
Yes, it is.
118-115. Portland wins the series 4-1 over Oklahoma City. Another early playoff exit.
Yeah, apparently these NBA playoffs, admittedly, I haven't been completely locked into them, but apparently they're pretty boring.
Yeah, well, they're about to get interesting.
Are they? Okay, good.
Okay. Okay, so Dame has himself a hell of a game. 50 points, hits the 37-footer at the buzzer to eliminate the Thunder. But the playoffs are starting to shape up now. In the East, Toronto took out Orlando last night, winning that series 4-1. So we're going to have a Toronto versus Philadelphia Eastern Conference semifinals. So you have Kawhi Leonard in company with the Raptors, tough defensive-minded team. They're going to take on the 76ers, who finally pulled away from the pesky Brooklyn Nets, winning that series 4-1 last night. Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, J.J. Redick, Tobias Harris. Okay? 76ers versus Raptors. That very well could have been your Eastern Conference Finals. But that's going to be one of the semifinals in the Eastern Conference. Your other semifinal is going to be top seed Milwaukee Bucks with the Greek Freak.
Tell me I said it wrong.
You did, but I don't know how to say it myself. So Giannis. I just call him Giannis or the Greek Freak.
I've seen him live at TD Garden when I went to Boston last year.
Hashtag humble brag.
Well, I didn't pay for the ticket, so it's not like I did.
Hashtag humble brag even more.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. But no, I've seen him live, and, dude, I mean, you watch him on TV, it doesn't matter. You can watch as many YouTube clips as you want. It doesn't matter. We were in TD Garden. He was the away team, and there were three Grecian flags in the crowd. Like, it's not a joke. This dude, I mean, I don't know.
He's going to win MVP.
By the end of his career, what we might be saying about a guy whose name we can't pronounce could be incredible.
Milwaukee and the Greek Freak are going to take on the Boston Celtics, who the Celtics have had an up-and-down season. Hayward still is not quite right from the injury. There's been some infighting, trade talks, the whole nine yards, but Boston sure is coming together at the right time. So you get Boston Celtics versus Milwaukee Bucks in one semifinals in the Eastern Conference, and the other one's Philly and Toronto. Those two series are going to be lights out. That's going to be your entertainment. The first round of these NBA playoffs have been a little lackluster, one-sided affairs, with the exception of what's going on in the Western Conference, though. Because in the Western Conference, there's actually been some competitive series going on. Tops of the list is the Denver Nuggets versus San Antonio Spurs. The Nuggets won last night 108-90. They now hold a 3-2 lead in that series over the San Antonio Spurs. Tim Duncan ain't walking through that door. I'm just saying. They have not been the same since Timmy retired. Okay? It's time for a rebuild.
When you follow one of the greatest big man or big guys in NBA history with another one of the greatest big guys in NBA history,
Aldridge is not that same level.
Exactly. That's not his fault. Yeah.
Not his fault. He's a good player. He's not David Robinson. He's not the
Admiral. He's not the big fundamental.
Right. He's just not.
Okay? That's not his fault.
You can't build around him. He's a piece. He's a good player. He's an all-star. But he's not a generational talent. Okay? So San Antonio is on the verge of elimination by the Denver Nuggets. That's been an entertaining series, a back-and-forth series. The other one that's still not completed as well, two more series could be wrapped up tonight. The Jazz are on the brink of elimination. Donovan Mitchell, one of the best young players in the game, they're going to try to stave off elimination against the Houston Rockets. The Rockets lead that series 3-1. They'll be playing tonight at 7 o'clock in Game 5. Also, a Game 5 is the Clippers at the Golden State Warriors. You expect the Warriors to close this out. Lock that up, move on, and advance, because who the hell is going to beat the Warriors? So a little drama in the West, but not really. But the semifinal matchups in the Western Conference and Eastern Conference, specifically the Eastern Conference, it's going to be must-see playoff basketball for sure. Second hour is now officially in the books. When we come up, Big Fave himself. Talk to me, somebody, our good friend. Marlon Favorite's going to join us right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game. Go, go,
go, go. Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU's for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
But it's definitely a boost for you, you know, when you look up in the bed and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's just different. And I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home, to do it, deserve it, feel it.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company, third hour of today's show, right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW, Channel 32.1, Stadium Network. It's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our next guest. He is a former Southeastern Conference and BCS National Champion with the LSU Tigers. He also played professional football, winning a Super Bowl with the New Orleans Saints and playing for the New Orleans Voodoo of the Arena League. Now he's part of the LSU pregame. He also has a successful podcast. He probably has his own TV show that we don't know about yet. But it's time to welcome back to the show, Marlon Favorite. Marlon, how are you this morning, brother?
Oh, man, I'm feeling great. What's that, 337? Hello, somebody.
Marlon, let's get right to it, man. Look, you bleed the purple and gold. You work covering the purple and gold now. What was yesterday like to you to see a guy, a Baton Rouge native, an LSU grad, a guy who worked at LSU, a guy who loves LSU, taking over as athletic director? Your thoughts on Scott Woodward being hired as the new AD there at LSU, brother?
Man, I was excited. I thought my initial thoughts was, Man, let's get back. Let's take it back to that old school, baby, 03, 04. You know, back, obviously, Scott was a part of the program years ago, grad. I want to say Scott's last year there was my first year, 04, 03, give or take. But I just think it's huge for the entire school, man. I think, and I'm not discrediting Joel Lever at all, but everything that happened in the last few years, we needed a fresh start. And nothing's better than familiarity. Man, before I got hired by LSU Sports Network to do the pre and post game, and RP, man, I'm going to speak that into existence, man. I might have a TV show coming soon. Talk to me now. But I like that. But what I remember more than anything else in that regard is how important it is to build a program up in those relationships, man. Before I got hired by LSU Sports Network, I spoke with Michael Barnett, and one thing he said, he was like, man, Faye, we want to get more guys that's from the program back here. You know, and it was music to my ears because it's something I love doing. Obviously broadcasting, but you're more passionate and you take it more to heart when it's yours. So I know the decisions that Scott's going to make is going to be top grade A decisions with all the athletic programs, and I'm super excited. What he's done at Texas A&M has been great, bringing over Jimbo Fisher. That's huge for Texas A&M, and I know he's ready to get this thing going for sure. So super excited to have him, our AD now, and I think the Tigers have a really good treat in Scott Woodward.
Marlon, my next question to you is, you know, they presented him yesterday with a portion of the field goal from the 2003 season. My question to you is, do you have a portion of the field goal from your national championship winning season? And if so, where is it located?
I don't have it. I wish I did. I want to say from that from 2007 national championship, I may have misplaced all my jerseys. So if my boy G-String listening, equipment guy over there, man, needs some more Big Fame jerseys, I misplaced the moving. But I still have, like, footballs and, you know, different memorabilia. But the biggest thing I have is the memories. So that's you can't lose that. It's right in the head. So I don't have the goalpost, but I wish I did. I think my older son would love to have it hanging in his room.
What did you make, Big Fave, of everyone coming out like they did? I mean, everyone was there. Ed Orgeron was there. Skip Bertman was there. And it just seemed to be like almost like a concert, like a rock star had come to town there in BR for an athletic director. Man, this isn't a coach. This isn't, you know, a recruit signing on the dotted line, you know, like Derek Stingley Jr. deciding to commit to LSU. I mean, this had that kind of buzz and that kind of juice to it. I was very surprised by that. What about you?
I wasn't surprised, man. I think the entire school knows how important it is to have a guy like Scott around, given what's been going on the last few years. That type of turnout didn't throw me for a loop at all. It really didn't. It just goes to show you the amount of respect that Scott Woodward has with the staffers in that organization. I mean, anytime Skip comes out, man, that's huge. And just looking forward to seeing the things he's going to implement and the changes that he's going to make. And, again, somebody that's passionate about what he does in regards of as an athletic director and a talent that's there. So it really didn't surprise me at all. You felt like Youngboy NBA or Boosie had a concert the way it came out. That's good. That's impact, man. That's huge.
We're talking to Marlon Favorite, former SEC champion and BCS champion for the LSU Tigers. He's part of the LSU Radio Network now. He also is the host of Inside the Trenches podcast, which is available on iTunes. Marlon, let's switch gears a little bit. Obviously, new athletic directors in place. Everything's kind of moving forward in that direction now. Draft starts tomorrow, first round, second round and third round is on Friday, and then rounds 4 through 7 are on the weekend. Now, I know you went through the preparation for the process, and even though you weren't, you know, a drafted player, I know you went through the process. You know a lot of these guys. You know what they're going through. How nerve-wracking is it for a guy that's 20, 21, 22 years old to go through this process of preparation through the All-Star games, through the combine, through the pro day, and leading up to the draft, dealing with agents and everything like that? How stressful can that be?
Well, it can be very stressful. I'll start there. But it's what you make out of it. I actually, we're going to be publishing Inside the Trenches, episode 186, here in a few hours. And what I remember about that process and what I was told is you have to just take everything with a grain of salt. If you think about, man, where I'm going to be drafted or which team's more interested in me in, will I end up being a free agent? Will I get called sooner than expected? If you start letting your mind, that consume your mind, oh, it's going to be really stressful. So the last thing I looked at, I'll never forget. I'll tell a quick story for our listeners. The thing that I remember more than anything else was the week before I looked at, I want to say this was Mike Medlock, his draft, his last draft board. He had me 6th round to the San Diego Chargers. So I will say this. I did feel like I was going to get drafted. We had just won a national championship the year earlier. We didn't have a really good season. We didn't have a good season in 2008 at LSU. I had knee surgery, but I just felt like my tape from the 2006-07 year and even the 2008 year would really put me where I need to be. So in preparation heading into that weekend, what I remember was me and my wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, but we're married now, went to Biloxi with a couple of friends, and we just chilled, just to kind of relax, headed into that weekend. I just stuck with the regimen, the routine, working out, checking in with my agent, just doing all the necessary things leading into the draft. But when it hit RP, that's when it did kind of get a little – the butterflies came, okay? You didn't go to first day. And back then it was first day and second day. So at the end of the draft, I didn't hear my name get called. So that was a little disheartening. It's just because it was a personal goal of mine. I wanted to get drafted somewhere, see my name under the screen. But my situation still worked out pretty good.
I would say that you ended up getting a Super Bowl ring there, man. I think it worked out well for you. And we've talked about that before. Marlon, talk to me a little bit about your perspective here. The Saints, team that you played for, team that you won a Lombardi Trophy with, you know, they have no position of real need, right? So they entered this draft with only the one pick in the first 2 days, the second rounder. They're in the middle of the second round. They've addressed the majority of their needs. They got themselves a running back in free agency. They got their backup quarterback. They've added some depth across the D-line. You know, they've brought a tight end. They don't have a position of need, but what do you think the mindset is with Mickey Loomis, Jeff Ireland and company, and Sean Payton heading into this draft? Do you think they're going to make a move? Do you think they have a player targeted that they want to trade up for, or do you think they're going to stay pat there and just take a guy right when it falls to them in the second round?
Thinking about this, I think they may stay at the second round. And here's why. I think if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, they did a lot of stuff in free agency headed into the draft. They brought over Malcolm Brown from the Patriots. That was an area I was worried about because of Sheldon Rankins being hurt and missed the beginning of the season. He's a guy that really plays a major part in the middle. So I was worried about that, by the way. He just signed, the Saints picked up his 5th-year option. So that's good for the black and gold. But my only areas of concern was next to him. Tyler Davidson is a guy, I think he started to play much better in the run game later on in the season. But I felt like, you know, Onyemata, he handled his business, but he may be facing a suspension. So you can find a quality defensive tackle later on, whether it's the second pick or the third, or your fifth round pick. The tight end position, they did re-sign Josh Hill, but Ben Watson retired last year. So I start thinking of guys like Charles Jones from Tulane. Start thinking of guys like Foster Moreau from LSU, just to name a couple of the, I think, talented tight ends in this year's draft. So I think that's two areas that they should really take a look at. If you can find a really nice outside linebacker, that would be good, defensive tackle, and a for sure tight end and center.
So you think, you know, tight end and center are our needs as well. You know, they did sign the guy, Eason, from the Minnesota Vikings. He can play center or guard, but I think they like him better at guard, Marlon. What do you think of some of the reports or some of the ideas, rather, that may have been floated out there that the Saints may be trading Andres Pete to someone to maybe pick up some more picks and maybe address some of those depth issues along both sides of the line?
I think that would be good. Andres Pete has really raised his value in the last few years as that, because to be quite honest with you, his first year in the league, I thought he would have been much, you know, I thought he would have been much better being that he was a first-round draft pick. But I do feel that they may have built some value in Pete, and he may be pretty good for trade bait, maybe to get a third or fourth-round pick, just to try to even it out before all the guys start falling off the board. But you do have a complete team here with the New Orleans Saints. Secondary is nice. Linebacking core is pretty nice. Defensive line, you have two good defensive edge rushers and all-pro and Cam Jordan. So trading Andres Pete wouldn't be bad, especially if you're trying to get a center. I mean, with Max Unger retiring, really did hit the Saints pretty hard. That did. I mean, everyone knows that the center is the linebacker of the offense. And Max has been around for years. I had a short stint with Max out in Seattle when the first year they drafted him in the first round. I mean, essentially you have a first-round center, veteran. So that's an area that they definitely need to address. I don't know if it's in a draft or in free agency. Like you said, Nick Eason, he came over. Smart guy, been in the league 4 years, but he may be better off at a guard. So if they move him to guard, trade Andres Pete, try to get some more draft picks, you could probably or trade for a position. You know, Mickey said it himself. We trade players too. So he let you know. I think he let the media know early this week, I'm trading one of these players, one or two of these players for sure.
Marlon, wrap it up with this, big man. Will Saints fans, in your opinion, be happy with what the team does, either via trade or just with their draft picks once the draft wraps up on Saturday?
I think they'll be happy. I think they'll be happy once everything, all the dust is settled on Saturday. You'll have a team that's complete, was able to get some guys in free agency, and what they had did really well in the draft.
Big Fave, appreciate you coming on, man. Why don't you tell everyone where they can go get your latest podcast, Inside the Trenches, my friend?
You can go to my Twitter at BigFave504. The podcast will be on there, or you can go to iTunes or wherever there's a podcast, search Inside the Trenches with Marlon Favorite, and enjoy the show. We have a heavy-hitting show. Matt Castle is going to be a guest on the show. Vernon Davis is going to be a guest on the show. We're taking it inside the trenches with Orlando Franklin, former second-round draft pick and former Saint. He played with the Saints for a little short stint. Orlando Franklin of the Denver Broncos, he's coming on the show. So it's going to be a treat for everyone. Thank you.
Well, Marlon, keep up the good work, man. We'll talk to you soon, man. Enjoy the draft and enjoy the rest of your week.
You do the same, brother. Y'all peace out.
Marlon Favorite, national champion at LSU, Super Bowl champion with the Saints. Breaking down a little LSU talk and a little Saints talk for us, as always. We appreciate him coming on. Got to go up. We're up on a break right here on RP3 and Company on 103.7 The Game.
Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards has proclaimed the month of April as Safe Digging Month here in Louisiana as part of a nationwide safety awareness campaign to draw attention to the importance of safe digging. Look, in Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines, guys, and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. So if you are a contractor that you have hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, swimming pool, or even just a garden, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. That's why it's so important for everyone to dial 811 and call Louisiana One, call 2 days before they dig. You just tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you and your contractor can avoid them. It's simple, it's free, and it's the law. All diggers and demolishers are required to notify Louisiana One Call before they begin work. The law applies to individuals as well as contractors, municipalities, and others. Failure to call can subject the individual to fines and liability for damages to buried infrastructure. Call 811 and know what's below before you dig.
And Altuve hits it high in the air at deep to left field, and you can kiss that one goodbye. Onto the train tracks, a three-run homer for Jose Altuve, and the Astros' lead is 10-4.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. Well, the Astros had dropped the series at the Tejas Rangers. Disappointing. Then they dropped the opener in this series to the Minnesota Twins. Also disappointing. And for the first few innings of last night's game, it sure did look like it was going to be another disappointment. The Twinkies got on the board with three runs in the first. Boom.
One swing of the bat.
Just one swing, and you're like, oh, here we go. But
I didn't get that highlight. Sorry.
That's okay. But the Astros, they chipped away, a run in the third, then three in the fifth, two in the seventh, and then four in the bottom of the eighth. They out-hit the Twins 12-6 and outscored them 10-4 to pick up the win to improve to 14-9 overall. You heard the highlight there.
Why don't you ask me who put the Astros ahead last night?
Who put the Astros ahead last night, Cody?
And that is lined over the leap of Gonzalez and into the left field corner. White scores. Thringer around third. He will score. Bregman racing for second. The throw is there in time. Bregman is tagged out, but it is a two-run single for Alex Bregman, and the Astros take the lead 4-3.
Go Tigers.
You got to say it. Come on. Say it better than that.
Go Tigers.
That's what I'm talking about. That's the level that I need.
Go Tigers.
That's not the same.
We got Woodward.
We got Woodward.
Go Tigers.
Where's that?
Go Tigers.
That's what I'm
talking about. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers. Hold that Tiger.
We're going to get him.
Going to get him.
That's the heart of a Tiger. Go Tigers.
It could take over any segment. It really could.
I love it. I love it. A quality start for Louisiana native Wade Miley. He helped put the Astros back on track. And then the ninth home run for Altuve. Jose Altuve has nine home runs. Nine. He's smaller than you, right?
Have you seen his 5-Hour Energy commercial? I'm very small. I'm very small because 5-Hour Energy is small, but they pack a lot of punch.
Pack a lot of punch.
I'm very small.
Springer, Dinger, and, of course, Bregman. They also had multi-RBI nights to end the three-game slide for the Astros. It was a great kind of pull-away blowout win for them. The team had 12 hits and 5 walks, multi-hit games for George Springer, Carlos Correa, Josh Reddick, and Tyler White. White has been sneaky. Sneaky good. He's been on base for 7 consecutive plate appearances now. Reddick, by the way, is 8 for 12 in his last 3 games. This is what I talk about when I talk about the Astros. They have so much talent, Cody. They have so much. Josh Reddick is 8 for 12 in his last 3 games. We haven't even talked about him.
Right. And speaking of Carlos Correa, his younger brother playing shortstop for Lamar last night, J.C. Correa.
That is his.
First inning. It was his younger brother.
Oh, nice.
He decided, in order to help himself learn English and things to try to play ball, he decided to go the college route and in America learn English a little better and then make his jump to the pros. But, yeah, Carlos Correa's little brother playing shortstop for Lamar.
Oh, see, that's next level. That's next level stuff you're giving me there, brother.
He didn't have a great game. In the field, though, the dude was smooth as butter in the field, but at the plate, it needed a little help.
By the way, Astros going to be on tonight right here on 103.7 The Game. The good brother Ben Love is going to be on from 4 to 6. He's going to lead you into Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 7. Then first pitch for Astros versus Twins rubber match right here on 103.7 The Game starting at 7 o'clock. When we come back, talk to Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, the man on the ones and twos, in charge of the music, in charge of making me sound at least competent. We won't go good or, you know, great. Our aspirations aren't that high.
We're just trying to avoid mushmouth from Fat Albert is what we're not going for. Ba-ba-ba-loomba.
Cody Schutz. Always. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 Stadium Network. It's time to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and welcome on our final guest of today's show. He's a friend of the program. He is the senior national columnist for Saturday Down South. It's the one and only Connor O'Gara. Connor, how are you this morning, brother?
I'm doing well. We're, 36 hours, a little bit less from the NFL draft. So that's like, you know, something that I feel like this pre-draft process is like, you know, 2 full years basically before we get to the actual draft itself. So to be actually within hours of it is kind of crazy.
It is kind of crazy. Before we get into draft talk and the conferences and who do you expect to kind of be some guys that are rising up the draft boards and guys that you think are going to be taken, I want to talk about my favorite tweet of yours over the weekend, which was this. Remember this, SEC fans. If your pastor likens Christ's rise from the dead to your team's climb out of the SEC basement, hashtag, it might mean too much. First of all, Connor, bravo. That is a tremendous tweet. I have to know the background on it, though.
So I've heard of some pastors using examples like this in the past, and I think there was a story about this a few months ago at this, I believe it was at this church in Oxford, where a pastor came in, and he's got these roots from Tennessee, and I think he's from Knoxville, and it was one of his first sermons in Oxford, and he came in, and he came in preaching about the power of tea and comparing it to you know, just Jesus's rise and all this stuff, and it was like, all right, really, like we're gonna go there. And I wrote about it for It Might Mean Too Much, which is a weekly column that I do every Friday on SDS, and the pastor got like really mad about it and like started tweeting at me a bunch and stuff. So it might mean too much on multiple fronts with that, but the thought just crossed my mind of like, hey, you know, I get this is how this thing usually works. I mean, I don't want to say usually, but there are some places in which it would not be a surprise to see that. And then sure enough, there's a story that goes national with a pastor in Athens who, not quite the same, but he had this graphic where he showed Florida on one side and Georgia on the other, and under the Florida side it was like sinful nature, slave to sin, all these things, and it was like, basically saying that Florida was like Adam and that Georgia was like Jesus and had all these comparisons. Not to get too religious or anything like that, but it was just like, it was peak SEC to see a comparison like that. And the pastor was, you know, he's saying it tongue-in-cheek, of course, but, you know, it's just funny to see that these are the type of comparisons made because, you know, I'm a Midwest guy. I grew up in the Midwest. I don't see these types of sermons in the Midwest. I can say that.
In the SEC, it just means more.
It just means more, Connor. That's tremendous. I want to get to you talked a little bit about the Midwest, and I know we spent a lot of time talking about the SEC. Obviously, we're an SEC country, but the number of NFL draft first round picks since 2010 Ohio State has 13, and I know probably 12 of those are on the Saints roster as of right now. Why has Ohio State been so prominent in producing NFL first-round talent year in and year out?
Well, the urban reason is a big part of that. I mean, as a guy who was at that program basically for almost the entirety of the decade, I mean, his ability to recruit is obviously off the charts. And Ohio State is never going to struggle with recruiting, obviously, with Jim Tressel. They were doing that, signing big-time recruits left and right. People remember Terrell Pryor and bringing in guys like that. I mean, I think that's just always going to be the standard at Ohio State. When you go out and you get somebody like Nick Bosa, who's a five-star, I mean, looks like as surefire a star as there could be at this level, given his genetics, given what his brother was able to do at Ohio State. Everybody, of course, was expecting, you know, Nick was actually a higher-rated prospect than Joey. And so, you know, you look at things like that, when you're able to bring in those kind of connections and what Urban Meyer had in the state of Florida, yeah, I mean, you feel pretty good about the fact that you should be able to turn out some NFL prospects. That's where this whole thing begins. And if you're bringing in more five-star talent, chances are you're going to bring in, you know, you're going to produce more NFL prospects. But, you know, Ohio State, you could look at all that, and you could look at a stat like that and say, man, how do they only win one national title this decade? How do they only have one run in which they went to the playoff and actually did something, and they didn't get shut out like they did against Clemson back in 2016? That's kind of a tough pill to swallow if you're an Ohio State fan. You had all of this talent come in, and we're going to look back on this, like, 4 or 5 year stretch at Ohio State where they had guys like Zeke and Joey Bosa and Mike Thomas and these big time players, and they're like, wait a minute, they only won one title? How is that possible? That's the tough thing for Ohio State fans, that you don't know with Ryan Day. It's not a guarantee that Ryan Day is going to be able to recruit like Urban Meyer did. Say what you want about Urban Meyer and having these collapses to teams like Iowa and Purdue, but the guy could recruit his pants off. There's no doubt about that. And the job that he was able to do, even bringing in a guy like Dwayne Haskins, who was previously committed to Maryland, and then Urban Meyer comes out and says, Dwayne Haskins is the best quarterback prospect I've ever recruited. And sure enough, that's what he ended up being. I mean, he ends up being the Big Ten all-time leader in all these records for a single season. And, you know, without Urban Meyer, that's a big question now moving forward. So I guess that's a long-winded way of answering your question by saying, yeah, it's Urban Meyer, but we don't know if that's going to repeat itself in the next decade.
We're on with Connor O'Gara, senior columnist for Saturday Down South. Connor, let's head back down to the SEC. I want to ask you about Devin White, obviously, with LSU, but we'll get to that. I want to talk about another impact linebacker stud, and that's Josh Allen from Kentucky. How much is he underrated? I guess that's my question to you. I know he's probably going to be a top five pick, more than likely a top 10 pick. A lot of people are high on him, but he seems to still be flying under the radar. Are we going to be talking about Josh Allen as a perennial Pro Bowler, maybe even an all-pro kind of talent in 5 years?
I absolutely believe that we will. And I think that there's actually a good chance that we look back on this draft 10 years from now and say, why wasn't Josh Allen the number one overall pick? I am that confident in him. And, you know, we talked to Mark Stoops a couple weeks ago. We had him on our podcast and just asking him, do you think Josh Allen should be the number one overall pick? And he said, you know, this guy has such a high floor. That's what you like about him so much. He's versatile. All these edge rushers get billed as these guys who all they could do is just rush the passer. That's it. That's it. That's it. Josh Allen is incredible in coverage. If you remember that Florida game, the play of the game was him, I think it was on the two-point conversion, where he breaks up this pass in the end zone. You're like, oh, my God, Josh Allen made that play? That wasn't a DB? Like, this guy is so good at so many things. And maybe people discount it because he was at Kentucky and it wasn't in a place like Alabama or Georgia or LSU. But I love Josh Allen a lot. And I think there are a lot of years in which he would be the number one overall prospect on big boards. I think if you actually break down some of the stuff that he did, you won't realize like how good of a year he did. We were talking to Matt Miller on our podcast as well, and he's like, why didn't Josh Allen get Heisman votes? I mean, the guy was unbelievable, like 21.5 tackles for loss, 17 sacks, and was so good in coverage and so instrumental in Kentucky having this storybook season. I can't get enough of Josh Allen. And he came out and said, you know, if I'm not the number one overall pick, I don't know who is. I love the confidence, and everybody, you know, talks about how great this guy is in the locker room. He wasn't hurt a single day that he was at Kentucky. He's durable. I just think that his floor is super, super high. And, yeah, I think he is going to develop into one of these all-pro guys. And we're going to look back years from now saying, man, this dude easily could have been number one in this draft.
Connor, you spoke about how he never was injured, didn't have to deal with injuries. Another huge impact player, a guy that I was immensely impressed by watching in person, was Montez Sweat. Yet I know there's been a lot of talk about him possibly falling out of the first round and maybe even out of the second due to some medical issues. What can you tell us about Montez?
It's tough because right now, and I saw Matt Miller of Bleacher Report, you know, had this the tweet that a lot of teams are taking him off the big board altogether, which is just a shame because you hear something about this, like a heart condition right before the draft, and the timing of it is terrible because this is somebody who could have left and gone to the NFL last year, but instead stayed and produced and had a great, great season on that defensive line at Mississippi State and was part of, you know, the best defense in terms of total yards in the country. And what he did as a pass rusher the last 2 years, man, if he was playing through a heart condition or something like that, you couldn't tell. And I know that these are the type of things that scare off teams because there are big-time investments made, especially if you're picking in the top half of the first round where you really got to get that pick right and you don't want to have your guy just be, oh, you know, we find out he had a heart condition, he can only play 2 years. That's the type of move that, if you know about it before the draft, you know, that could cost a front office their jobs. And so I get it if teams are lower on him or if they're souring, they're saying it's not worth the risk, but all it takes is one. And I have to believe that somebody in the first round is going to want to take a chance on him because the talent is there. And everybody needs edge rushers in today's day and age in the NFL. And there, for my money, there are not many of them better in the entire draft than Montez Sweat. And I think that I do hope that for the sake of his future and everything that he's been able to overcome the last 2 years, I mean, let's not forget that he was somebody who was kicked out of school at Michigan State, you know, for disciplinary reasons and was able to sort of rebuild and rebrand himself in Mississippi State as this hardworking guy, you know, who's done all the right things. I hope that it works out for him. I really do because he's been so much fun to watch in the SEC, not for opposing SEC teams, but for just watching the SEC in general. So, yeah, I still have to think that somebody's going to take a chance on him late in the first round.
Talking to Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. Connor, from 2012 to 18. You had tweeted this out there. There were only 21 quarterbacks picked in the first round. Only one was from the SEC, and that was John Football back in 2014. You say Drew Lock bucks that trend this year. A lot of people are kind of hot and cold on Drew. Do you think he can be a franchise quarterback in the NFL?
Yeah, but he's one of those guys that I mean, we talk about this a lot in the draft, but he really, really needs to go to the right situation. I could see a scenario. The variance with him is very significant. I could see scenarios in which he goes to an offense and, you know, he gets put with the wrong coordinator or guy that doesn't really know how to maximize his skill set, and it's ugly, and it gets really bad, and he looks like one of these first-round busts. I could also see a scenario in which he goes to a situation and maybe follows a little bit of the Pat Mahomes plan. And I know that not everybody is Pat Mahomes. I'm not saying Drew Lock has the same arm talent that Pat Mahomes has, but this was a guy who sat out a year behind Alex Smith, and after that first year of sitting out, he showed enough progression during that season, which he came out and admitted, like, hey, I needed that year off. I would have been a mess had I started that first year, and I was so grateful that I got to step into this role in year two and be comfortable and be myself, be a better version of myself. And I think Drew Lock needs a situation like that. I think he needs a situation in which, you know, even though he was a senior, he can sit out one or two seasons and develop under a veteran quarterback, somebody that maybe is in the tail end of his career. You know, a situation like out there in Denver where it's a guy like Joe Flacco, where Joe Flacco is not going to be the starter in Denver 5 years from now, at least we don't think he's going to be. And maybe he can develop behind somebody like that where he's not going to be forced to play immediately and he can learn how to read some defenses a little bit better, pick up blitzes, and just deal with the new speed of the NFL because I think that needs to happen. If that happens, yeah, I could see him being a franchise quarterback, but there are a lot of potential landmines with Drew Lock's landing spots that I don't know if you say that for as many quarterbacks in this draft.
Connor, wrap it up with this. I want you to tell us a little bit about the LSU guys. We know first round, Devin White, he's going to be a top five pick, at worst a top 10 pick. Greedy Williams keeps going up and down the draft board. It's a two-part question.
Is Devin White a done deal going to Tampa Bay? That's where all the projections have him, or could you see him going even earlier than that? And second question, even though Greedy doesn't tackle very well, he's still a great cover corner, and you really don't need your corners to tackle that much anymore. Do you still think he's a first-round pick?
I'm not as high on Greedy Williams, but I do think he's going to be a first-round pick. I do think that there are some potential issues there. I know the cover skills are strong, and you know, you like the length that he has on the outside to be able to match up against some of these and develop into, you know, a true lockdown corner. There is the potential there. I'm not quite as high on him just because I think if where he's going to be drafted, he's going to be asked to be able to play immediately, and I'm not sure he's on that level yet in the NFL. I have a little bit more questions about him than I do Devin White, where Devin White, you put him in the middle of your defense and you just watch him, you know, be the franchise guy for the next decade. And I don't think there are many questions about it. We actually have a mock draft that's coming out today, and I'll give you a little bit of a teaser, where in which myself and Adam Spencer, another SDS writer, we traded picks back and forth, and we did it based on what we would want to see this team do. Not what we think is going to happen, but what we would want a certain team to do.
Okay.
And I have Devin White coming off number 4 to the Raiders. I could just see that dude in the silver and black for a long time. And with the fact that the Raiders have these 3 first-round picks, you know, maybe Devin White can be a guy that they go out and get instead of Tampa because they know that he wouldn't be there on the board to even make it sense as like a potential trade-up situation. And they could just get him at the 4th overall pick. And they obviously need help in that defense, in the middle of it especially, you know, kind of make people forget about the Khalil Mack trade a little bit. I know Devin White's on the inside, but still, I think that would be a really nice fit, and I think that he would have a chance to have a lot of success there. So, yeah, I think Devin White could be a top-5 pick. It would not surprise me at all. He's a guy that I think we could look back on years from now and just say, man, that was such an obvious pick. That guy's going to have a ton of success at the next level. I don't know if he necessarily has the all-pro skill set, but, yeah, I mean, that's a guy that could make a ton of Pro Bowls if he goes into the right situation.
Connor, appreciate you taking time out for us as always, brother. Enjoy watching the draft. What's your big plans, man? You're going to have a party? You're going to go to, you know, B-dubs? Or what are you going to do, man?
Yeah, I'm gonna have a big party. I'm going to watch from my living room, probably by myself while my wife pretends that it's not on. I might, you know, might go pick up a smoothie or something. It's going to be pretty crazy times this weekend for me.
I love that line. And my wife's going to pretend like it's not on. And every man listening right now can relate to that. Thank you, Connor, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
And the wife will pretend that it's not on.
When does that kick in? Because my wife doesn't pretend that it's not on. My wife just leaves the room.
Well, it could go either.
It's one or the other.
So the wife will either leave the room and go do something else, right, or she'll just play on the phone.
Okay, see, I would prefer her to play on the phone because at least then I can, you know, when I'm talking about whatever I'm watching out loud, someone else is in the room. It seems less crazy.
Or you'll get the reaction, you know, this is not like a game. Why are you watching the draft? And be like, because I'm a big stupid man. That's why. I'm a big stupid man.
What I'll get, I already tell you, I'm seeing the future right now. I'll have the draft on tomorrow night or something. And I'll be like, and she'll be like, oh, I didn't know this was tonight. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, why didn't she? So when did the Saints pick?
Or when is it over?
No, she'll ask me because she's be interested. When did the Saints pick? Then when my response is, well,
middle Friday night.
As of right now, not till tomorrow, she'll be, what the hell are we doing? That will happen, guarantee it.
We'll wrap up this edition of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game after this. I want to thank all of today's guests for coming on, including Marlon Faberite and Connor O'Garrett. We got a jam-packed show lined up for you tomorrow. Danny Broussard will be live in studio. We'll also have Les East coming on from Crescent City Sports. And in studio, Cedric Bryant will be in. So we got a jam-packed show for you tomorrow. Cody and I will also be doing a mock draft for the entire first round live throughout tomorrow's show. It could get a little ridiculous. There could be some ridiculousness and entertainment involved with this mock draft, I sense.
I think this is finally the year John Cena gets picked by a team. Finally, this is his time.
So we'll have plenty of fun. Programming reminder, look, after us, Dan Patrick Show, and then the Jim Rome Show, Jordy Holberg Show. We'll have a guest host today as Uncle Jordy is out. Jeff Horchak will be in guest hosting. So make sure to tune in for that from 2 to 4. Then the good brother, Ben Love, will be on from 4 to 6. He's going to lead you into Five Guys Stories and Lies from 6 to 7. And after that, Houston Astros baseball rubber game, rubber match versus the Minnesota Twins tonight. First pitch, 7 o'clock, right here on 103.7 The Game. Y'all have a terrific day out there. Cody, great job today, brother.
Thank you, Raymond. Wonderful job to you as well.
Y'all be safe out there. Enjoy yourself. We'll talk to you tomorrow.